Chapter 13. Taking the long view is all well and prudent, but take care that you don't become so preoccupied with it that you miss what's right under your nose. Precepts of Saint Emilia, Chapter 34, Verse 12. We pressed on, even more warily now, if that were possible, because it was obvious from the presence and layout of the checkpoint that we were somewhere deep inside the perimeter of the enemy encampment. The Tau took the lead again, which was fine by me, as whatever sensor gear they had inside those odd-shaped helmets of theirs seemed a good deal more reliable than Amberley's Auspex. She'd consulted it a few more times since it had failed to detect our alien companions, but after Gorok's announcement and my panic-stricken deduction of what we truly faced, I wasn't expecting anything more from it. Of course, some of the enemy down here might still be sufficiently human to register on the thing, but I'd be a damn sight more worried about the ones that weren't. So I relied on my eyes and ears and dropped back far enough to voice my fears to Amberley where the others were unlikely to overhear us. "This isn't what you were expecting to find, is it?" I asked, trying desperately to keep my voice calm. Even so, it seemed to be rising in pitch to an alarming degree. Amberley looked at me with her usual appearance of cheery good humour, which I was beginning to suspect was as much a mask as my own attempt at professional detachment. "To be honest, no," she admitted. "I thought we were just after some run-of-the-mill insurrectionists when we came down here. If we're right, this changes things a bit." A damn sight more than a bit as far as I was concerned, but I wasn't about to be outcooled by anyone, so I just nodded agreement as though I was considering our options carefully. "I can't get a message back to command," I said. "We've come too deep." All I'd been able to raise on my combead for some time was static. I looked at her hopefully. "Unless you've got something more powerful?" "Afraid not." She shook her head, apparently only mildly put out by the inconvenience. "So I guess we're on our own." "I could take Jürgen and backtrack a bit," I suggested. "Try to get a message through at least. The Lord General should be informed of our suspicions right away. If we're right, we need a couple of regiments down here, not half a squad and a handful of Xenos." "I appreciate the offer, Caiaphas." She looked at me with those wide blue eyes, a twinkle of amusement in the back of them, and I felt suddenly sure that she could read my true intentions with ease. "But at the moment, suspicion is all we have. If we're wrong, and I hope to the Emperor we were, mobilizing that number of troops would only undermine our truce with the Tau. And if we're right, chances are none of us will survive to warn him," I said. "I've done this before, remember?" "I've had a little experience with aliens too," she reminded me, and I suddenly realized I was all but arguing with an Inquisitor. That was a sobering thought, and I shut up fast. Amberley smiled at me again. "But you do have a point. As soon as we have confirmation one way or the other, we'll pull back." And that was something, at least. I nodded my agreement. "I think that would be prudent. Even with the Xenos's firepower, we wouldn't stand much of a chance otherwise." "Oh, I don't know." She smiled again, to herself this time, as though she knew something I didn't. Which she did, of course, but she was an Inquisitor after all, so I guess she was supposed to. "We might have a bit of an edge ourselves." She was glancing at Jürgen as she said it, and I remember thinking one melter gun wasn't going to make all that much of a difference. But of course it did in the end, and that wasn't the edge she'd been thinking of in any case. We'd gone on for maybe another 3 kilometres when the Shasui held up his curious malformed hand for silence. Over the last couple of hours, we'd become quite adept at reading the non-verbal signals of our alien companions, although none of us were really at ease with them. Kelp at least looked as though he was just waiting for an excuse to open fire, and much as I disliked the man, I had to admit that he probably had a point. Xenos was Xenos after all, and even though we were supposed to be on the same side at the moment, I knew from bitter experience that any such alliances could only be temporary, and were liable to be bloodily severed without warning at any time. "He says he's picking up life forms ahead in large quantities," Gorok said quietly, translating the flickering finger signs. The Tau all had voxcasters. An Emperor knew what else built into their helmets, but their Kroot allies had no such aids to communication, and, I was beginning to suspect, would have spurned them if they'd been offered anyway. So they used this peculiar semaphore to pass orders and information silently, in much the same way that guard units did when the troopers didn't have individual combeads, or the enemy was so close they might have overheard a verbal transmission. "How large?" Amberley whispered, taking a final look at the screen of the Auspex, which, for once, actually seemed to be displaying some life signs that weren't ours or the six troopers with us. The answer seemed to perturb her slightly, as I could see far fewer blips than the number Gorok translated, but then that worried me too, as it seemed to confirm our worst fears. "We're going to have to confirm this visually, aren't we?" I asked. Not because I expected an answer, but because asking the question gave me the comforting illusion of some measure of control over my destiny, which at that point I thought was all too likely to be short, bloody, and messily terminated. Amberley nodded, looking grimmer than I would have thought possible, and it suddenly struck me that even an Inquisitor could feel fear under the right circumstances. And if ever the circumstances were right to be terrified, these were the ones. "I'm afraid so," she said, sounding as though she actually meant it. I've often wondered since if things would have worked out any differently if we'd warned the troopers in advance what we were getting into. After all, they were all veterans and had fought a Tyranid invasion to a standstill, so they weren't likely to have flown into a panic at the news. But on the other hand, I didn't trust them. And that was the plain, honest truth. For all I knew, if I told them what we'd surmised, they'd simply desert, killing Amberley to cover their tracks as Sorrel had suggested. And me too, of course, which was the really important issue so far as I was concerned. So, rightly or wrongly, I kept my mouth shut, and let them go on thinking we were simply after an insurrectionist cell, and if that left their blood on my hands, I can live with it. It's not like I haven't done far worse, to far less deserving people over the years, and I haven't lost any sleep over them either.
I suspect this isn't entirely true. I've certainly known him to be woken by nightmares on several occasions.
After a few more moments of consultation, which Amberley and Gorok helpfully translated, we moved on, more cautious than before. A few meters ahead, the corridor seemed to open out into a wider chamber, as we'd seen several times already on our journey through the Undercity, and I expected this one to be little different, like the one we'd discovered the checkpoint in, or the larger one where the Tau had slaughtered the outer guards. So as I reached the opening and peered cautiously round it, my breath left my body in an involuntary gasp. The chamber was huge. Vaulted tens of meters over our heads, like the Scholar Chapel where I'd spent many dull and drafty hours as a juvie listening to old Chaplain Dishonest, droning on about duty and loyalty to the Emperor and furtively swapping salacious holopics with the other cadets. The atmosphere here was about as far from musty piety as it was possible to get. However, palpable danger seeped from every corner. We'd come out on a mezzanine gallery some 20 meters above the floor, and, Emperor be praised, there was a waist-high balustrade around it, which afforded us a measure of concealment. We crouched behind it, humans and aliens alike, equally appalled at the sight which met our eyes. The space below us was vast, receding into the distance like a Forge World manufactoria. I'd seen a Titan maintenance bay once, where warhounds were rearmed and readied for battle, and the huge, echoing space had bustled with the same sense of martial purpose. Instead of towering metal giants, however, this space held only people, scurrying to and fro in their hundreds, tending to vast machines of great antiquity, whose purpose I could only guess at.
Subsequent study of the city records leads me to believe we were in one of the primary distribution centres of the water purification system. Like many examples of technology from the early days of settlement on human worlds, it had apparently been functioning undisturbed for several millennia, and would no doubt have continued to do so indefinitely if we hadn't started blowing holes in it shortly thereafter.
Of rather more immediate interest to me, though, were the ones carrying, drilling with, and maintaining with a meticulousness which would have done credit to a member of the Imperial Guard, more small arms than I was happy to see in the hands of anyone other than His Majesty's most loyal servants. "Emperor's bones!" Trebek muttered. "There's an entire army of them down here." A few short, sibilant exclamations from among the Tau were enough to confirm that they were as unpleasantly surprised as we were. "It's worse than that," Kelp muttered. Amberley and I exchanged concerned glances, already aware of what he'd noticed, but then we'd been expecting it, and had known what to look for.
"How do you mean?"
Helenby whispered, his habitual frown of puzzlement back on his face.
"They're mutants,"
Sorrel told him, scanning the chamber through the magnifying optics of his sniper scope.
"Some of them, anyway."
A ripple of unease stirred the troopers. An atavistic loathing of the unclean rising to the surface, despite their training and discipline. Now that someone had pointed it out, the contamination was obvious. Though many of the cultists below us were human, or could pass for it, others were unmistakably something else. In some cases it was as subtle as a wrongness of posture, a peculiar hunching of the back, or an elongation of the face, but in others it was far more pronounced. In these individuals the taint of the alien was obvious, their skin hardened almost to armour, their jaws wide and filled with fangs, a few sprouted extra limbs tipped with razor-sharp claws.
"No, they're not,"
Jürgen chipped in helpfully, blissfully unaware of my frantic shut-up hand gestures as he shaded his eyes for a closer look.
"They're gene-stealer hybrids. We saw plenty just like them on Kefir, and..."
His voice trailed off lamely as he finally turned his head in my direction and saw the expression on my face.
"And we wiped them all out,"
I finished, trying to sound decisive and confident. Kelp's jaw clenched.
"You knew?"
It was a flat statement, an accusation, and the others all hung on his words.
"You knew what was waiting down here all along, and you led us right into it to get slaughtered."
"No one's getting slaughtered unless I do it," I snapped back, realizing that if I lost the initiative now, I'd never regain it, and that would mean the end of everything. The mission, me, Amberley, and probably Gravelax too. Although the welfare of the planet wasn't exactly at the top of my priority list. "This is a recon mission, nothing more. Our objective was to identify the enemy, which we've done, and get back to report that information. We're pulling back to the surface now to call in reinforcements, and we'll only engage in self-defense. Satisfied?"
He nodded, slowly, but the truculence remained on his face.
"Works for me," Sorrel said.
Valade, Trebek, and Hollenby nodded, following his lead.
"Not for me."
Kelp raised his hellgun, aiming squarely at Amberley. Sibilant whispers of consternation rippled through the tower, but the Chasui gestured the ones who'd begun to raise their weapons to stand down, and to my relief they complied. The last thing we needed now was to start killing each other. There were plenty of Stealers around to do that job, and attracting their attention was right up there with challenging an orc to an arm-wrestling contest so far as really bad ideas went.
"I'm out of here. And I'll kill her if you try to stop me."
I reached for my pistol, but she shook her head.
"No, Commissar. He's not going to shoot, are you, Tobias?"
She tilted her head towards the bustling throng of half-human monsters below. The noise would bring them all running, and you wouldn't get 100 meters before they ripped you to pieces. The same thing would apply to my sidearm, I realized, as I let it slip back securely into its holster.
"You'll never get away with this,"
I said levelly, absurdly conscious of sounding like a character in a holodrama. A sneer of derision crossed his face.
"Like I've never heard that before."
"Get out of here." Amberley's voice was stiff with contempt. "I've no use for cowards. You had a second chance and you pissed it away." For the first time, a flicker of unease moved across his face, and he took a step backwards.
"You'd better hope the Stealers find you first," I added. "With all the bravado which comes from issuing an empty threat, you know you'll never have to back up. Because if I ever catch up with you, you're in for a world of hurt."
"Dream on, Commissar. I've taken my last order from you." He looked at the others, hoping for some show of support, but they just stared back, their faces set. I was surprised. I don't mind admitting it, but when you came down to it, they were still soldiers of the Emperor before anything else. After a moment, Kelp stepped back into the shadows and turned, and we heard the sound of running feet receding down the tunnel.
"I reckon I've still got a shot,"
Sorrel offered, raising the long las and sighting carefully in the direction of the sound.
"And this thing's silenced."
I shook my head. "Let him go," I said. "At least he'll still be good for drawing their fire.
The sniper nodded and lowered his weapon.
"Your call," he said.
Amberley was still engaged in earnest conversation with the Tau, though how she was hoping to retain their confidence after this was beyond me, so I did my best to rally the troops with a few quiet words of praise for their loyalty.
"The Shasui is saying it would be most prudent to divide our forces again," Gorak translated helpfully.
Big surprise there, I thought. If I was the Shasui, and I'd just seen one of our allies pull a gun on his commander, I'd be having second thoughts about our little arrangement now, too.
"We both need to report this to our own forces," Amberley said, breaking off just long enough to meet my eye, then returning to her sibilant dialogue.
"No question of that," I agreed.
"So what's taking so long?" "The Tau were unaware of this ability of the creatures you call gene-stealers," Gorok said. "They knew them only as a warrior form of the Tyranid Overmind. Your Inquisitor is attempting to enlighten them as to their true nature."
"They're infiltrators," I explained. "They worm their way into a planet society and weaken it from within before the Hive Fleets arrive. Wherever they go, they sow disorder and anarchy."
"Then they are indeed a potent threat," the Kroot agreed.
"Sir," Valade whispered urgently, trying to attract my attention. I turned towards her, and she gestured down towards the chamber floor. "Something's happening down there."
"Time to leave," I said, tapping Amberley on the shoulder. She glanced up at me and nodded.
"I think you're right.
One of the hybrids, an ugly fellow who might have passed for human in a bad light if it wasn't for a complexion which looked as though he'd recently showered in acid, was running into the chamber. He was carrying something under his arm, and after a moment I realized it was the head of the Kroot Sorrel had shot."
"Oh, frack," I said.
They were onto us now, and no mistake. As he moved further into the cavern, more and more of the cultists stopped what they were doing and crowded around him. The most eerie thing about it was that none of them said anything, just clustered together in silence and stared at the grisly trophy.
"What are they doing?"
Trebek asked quietly.
"Communicating,"
Amberley responded, turning to lead us back up the corridor we'd entered by.
"They've all got this hive mind thing, remember?"
Valade was tense but determined. "You just have to shoot the big ones."
"It's not like the Tyranid Overmind," Amberley said. "They're all individuals. They're just linked to each other telepathically, at least up close."
"Like psychers,"
Jürgen added helpfully.
"I hope so," Amberley said, though what she meant by that I still didn't know at the time.
"Pull back slowly," I ordered.
"They haven't noticed us yet. We've still got time to make it back to the surface before they realize where we are. And we probably would have done, too, if it hadn't been for the bloody Kroot."
"They taint the flesh," Gorok said. "And they must not taste ours."
Before I had a chance to react, or even realize what the hell he was on about, he shouted something in his own tongue to his compatriots. My bowels froze. As that avian screech echoed round the chamber, every head turned in our direction as though tugged by the same string. I was uncomfortably reminded of a Hydra battery coming to bear. Uncounted eyes stared at us for a moment, then they broke and ran, as Gorok and the other Kroot aimed their long-barreled weapons at the center of the group and opened fire.
"What the hell do they think they're doing?"
Hollenby asked.
"Who cares? Run!" I ordered.
Looking back, I could see they'd felled the hybrid carrying the Kroot head, and another volley popped the trophy to mush.
I'm still not sure why that was so important to them. All I could assume is that they'd grasped some of what Amberley had been saying about the gene stealer's peculiar ability to overwrite the genetic code of their victims, and had thought possession of the severed head would have let them infect other Kroot in some way. Palpable nonsense, of course. Gene stealers need live victims to infect, so that when they have children of their own, they unwittingly spread the taint. But I suppose it got mixed up in some way with their religion, or whatever else it is that makes them go around chewing lumps out of corpses. At the end of the day, a Xeno's a Xeno, and who knows why they do anything.
For a rather more accurate and informed analysis of Kroot psychology, see Zygmunt's Warriors of Pesh, The Savage Sophisticates, which is readily available from the restricted stacks of any Ordo Xenos Librum.
One thing I was sure about, though, was that the Tau were as surprised as we were. The Shasui was shouting something I could make a pretty good guess at the gist of without an interpreter, but the Kroot weren't listening. and he gave up in favour of trying to organise his own squad. Not a moment too soon, either, because the amount of noise from the corridor we'd entered by told me we were about to have company. A volley of plasma fire from the Tau guns ripped down the corridor, almost blinding me with its brightness, and I turned away. We wouldn't get back out the way we'd come in, that was for sure. And our only hope was to move off along the gallery and hope to find a clear route through one of the other tunnel mouths. Incredibly, the enemy kept coming. Although I half expected that after my adventures on Kefir, where they just kept leapfrogging the pile of their own dead in their eagerness to close. A ragged volley of lasbolts and autogun fire thundered in reply, and one of the Tau went down, his armour shredded by multiple impacts. "Tell them to pull back before they're slaughtered," I said to Amberley, and she nodded before shouting something in Tau. Not that I cared, of course, but the longer the Xenos kept firing, the further away we'd get, I hoped. "There's another tunnel up ahead," Valade called excitedly, then turned back to face us, raising her Hellgun. I flinched, anticipating treachery after all, but the high-powered lasbolt went wide of us, impacting on the thorax of the first of the enemy to emerge from the tunnel behind us. "Emperor's bowels," Trebek said, following suit. My heart froze with terror. I'd seen too many, on Kefir, and as part of the screeching mass of a Tyranid army, to mistake it for anything else. A pure strain gene stealer, one of the deadliest creatures in creation. And it wasn't alone.
Chapter 14. Never take a gamble you're not prepared to lose. Abdul Goldberg, Rogue Trader. My order to pull back had bought us a little time, at least. The horde of mutant crossbreeds vomited out of the tunnel between us and the Tau, forcing the two parties apart, taking punishing casualties, but still laying down a withering volley of fire as they came. I recognised the tactic from the cleansing of Kefir, and Jürgen evidently did too, as he raised the melter before falling back. The blast of superheated air roared against my face, vaporising the oncoming Steeler and chewing a chunk out of the front few ranks. The firing continued, with las bolts and bullets chewing up the masonry around us, and I felt a sudden blow against my chest. I glanced down. A lasbolt had impacted against the borrowed armour beneath my greatcoat, and I blessed the foresight that had impelled me to requisition it. We were all shooting continuously now, the troopers retreating in good order by fire and movement, much to my relief. Amberley had produced a bolt pistol from the depths of her cloak and wielded it with a skill no less greater than my own, bringing down two more of the bounding monstrosities with carefully placed shots. The explosive bolts detonated inside their chitinous shells, blowing their thoraxes to bloody mist. "Keep your distance!" I shouted. The hybrids were hoping to pin us, allowing the pure strains to close, and if that happened, it would all be over. They bounded forward eagerly, claws scything. And if you think that's not intimidating to a man with a gun, then all I can say is count yourself lucky you've never been close to one. I was there when the reclaimers boarded the spawn of damnation and saw the pure strains which infested it tearing open their Terminator armour as though it were cardboard to get at the Astartes within.
The spawn of damnation was a space hulk which drifted into the Corollian gap in 928. Kane was liaising with the Astartes chapter in question at the time, as a member of the brigade command staff, and went in with the Imperial Guard unit detailed to mop up after the initial Astartes assault.
After that, you can be sure I never wanted to be within an arm's length of those killing machines again. And since they have four of the damn things, that can be harder than it sounds.
"You don't have to tell me twice!"
Trebek placed a couple of accurate shots, downing a pure strain and a hybrid with a flamer. Thank the Emperor she'd spotted that, I thought, or it would have been the end of us for sure. Sorrel followed up, putting a round through the Prometheum tank, and the width of the gallery erupted in flame.
"Good shooting," I said.
He acknowledged the compliment with a nod and turned to retreat. He'd bought us some time, I noted with gratitude, the Inferno blocking us off from our assailants and consigning many of them to an agonizing death. The most terrifying thing, though, was that they burned in silence, trying to walk towards us through the flames until their musculature gave out and they collapsed, consumed by the imperative to kill the swarm's enemies no matter what the cost. On the other side of the blazing barrier, the Kroot were overwhelmed in seconds, despite their phenomenal skill in close-quarter combat, swinging the blades of their curious pole-arm rifle hybrids to tremendous effect. But for every eviscerated cultist that fell, another stepped forward, and then the pure strains tore into them, and it was all over in less than a second. Gorok was the last to fall, standing alone and defiant on a pile of the dead, until a frenzied flurry of blows shredded his body in a shower of blood. What happened to the Tau, I couldn't see, but they'd stopped firing, so they'd either managed to disengage, or they were all dead by now. My money was on the latter, but even if I was wrong, we'd never be able to rejoin them now, so the question was merely academic in any case. I swear I'd only glanced back for a second, but when I looked round, I was alone. The others had retreated, as I'd ordered, but which of the half-dozen tunnel mouths they'd disappeared down was anybody's guess. The terror of isolation gripped me for a moment. Then I pulled myself together. The pool of promethium wouldn't burn forever, and the cultists presumably knew this labyrinth well enough to circumvent it without too much difficulty in any case. So if I stayed where I was any longer, I was a dead man.
"Jürgen!"
I shouted.
"Inquisitor!"
There was no answer. So I picked the nearest tunnel and started to run. As I entered the welcoming darkness, the panic I'd tried to force down resurfaced, stronger than before, and try as I could to make myself slow down and get my bearings, fear had control of my limbs now. I ran as hard and as fast as I could, heedless of the dangers that might be lurking in the darkness around me, or the hidden obstacles which were likely to be lying in wait for an unwary shin or an ankle to turn, and didn't stop until my breath was rasping my lungs like sandpaper, and my legs had begun to tremble from the exertion. Panting hard, I sat on a convenient heap of rubble and tried to take stock of my situation, which was undoubtedly grim whichever angle I looked at it from. For one thing, I was still deep underground, in a labyrinth I didn't know how to get out of, infested with slavering monsters. For another, the only allies I had down here probably thought I was dead, and even if they didn't, they weren't likely to waste any time searching for me. The information we'd gathered about the true nature of the threat gnawing away beneath our feet was too important to risk, and Amberley would insist on returning to the surface as quickly as possible to warn the Lord General. At least if our positions were reversed, that's what I would have done. On the plus side, however, I was quietly confident of finding my way back to the surface given enough time, provided I didn't run into any more company on the way. And my solitude was a positive advantage in that regard, as a man moving alone will always be more stealthy than a group. Corridors like these had been my playground as a child, and I'd never quite lost the knack of finding my way around them. Despite my panic-stricken flight, I still had a vague idea of which direction our compound lay and how far we'd come. In fact, if my guess about us being somewhere under the old quarry was accurate, I might even be closer to the surface than I realized. And once I'd made it back to the open air, returning to the compound shouldn't prove at all difficult. And in case you were wondering, the irony of genuinely experiencing what I'd briefly considered, feigning the previous night, wasn't lost on me. Fleeing in terror, I'd just like to note in passing, for those of you who have so far been lucky enough to avoid the experience, generally leaves you both hungry and thirsty. At least that's been the case with me on most occasions, and I've done it frequently enough to qualify as something of an expert on the topic. So I hope you'll take my word for it. Anyhow, I decided to take advantage of this relatively peaceful interlude to replenish my energy. So I sat for a while longer, sipping water from my canteen and chewing a ration bar, the flavour of which, as usual, hovered just outside the range of identification. The impromptu picnic raised my spirit somewhat, and I took advantage of the quiet moment to still the thudding of my heart and try to distinguish the sounds in the darkness around me. I briefly considered turning the luminator back on, but decided against it, as it would give my position away, besides which my eyes had adjusted to the gloom as well as they were going to by now, and I could quite readily distinguish vague shapes of lighter or darker shadow. My other tunnel rat senses had come into play too. I could tell by the echoes how close I was to a wall, for instance. I've often tried to explain it, but the only way you could really understand it is if you'd spent a large part of your early life in the lower levels of a hive somewhere. It was while I was gradually recovering my wits that I first heard the faint scrape of something moving in the dark. Now, I dare say most people's reaction under those circumstances would have been to call out or snap the luminator on, neither of which was a particularly attractive option given my current situation, as I'm sure you'll appreciate. Besides, I wasn't particularly concerned as to what it might be. As I've said before, the environment was one I knew well, and I'd be happy to match my experience of blind fighting in tunnels against almost any foe. I was also pretty confident that any Steelers or hybrids in the vicinity wouldn't have bothered lurking either, just charged straight in. So I simply waited, and was rewarded a moment later by the faint skittering sound of a small piece of rubble falling away. That was a sound I could identify with some confidence, and I concluded that I was sharing my refuge with some kind of vermin. An accurate assessment, as I was soon to discover, but not quite in the way I'd imagined. Before I could consider the matter further, however, I was distracted by a faint tinnitus in my ear, which gradually rose in volume until I was able to distinguish an almost inaudible wash of static. My combead was active, and that could mean only one thing. Someone was transmitting on the command frequency reasonably close by. Moreover, there was only one person it could possibly be. A conclusion confirmed by the faint voice, unmistakably feminine, which ebbed in and out of audibility. "Can you hear? Commissar? Respond?" The breath sighed from my lungs as relief punched me in the gut. They might have moved out, as the mission demanded, but it seemed they hadn't given up on me entirely after all. "Inquisitor?" I asked cautiously. "You wish." The voice was close and harsh, and if Kelp had been able to resist the taunt, the rifle butt which followed it would probably have stove my skull in. As it was, he'd been considerate enough to warn me, so I ducked it easily, and drove my fist into the pit of his stomach, which was still protected by his hard-shell body armour, of course. So much good it did me apart from bruising my knuckles. The real ones, anyway. The augmetics were rather more robust than that. He was still off balance, though, so I drove my hip in and tried to throw him, but he twisted out of the way just in time. For a big man, he was a pretty fast mover, I'll give him that. A vivid memory of the brawl in the mess hall flashed across my mind, so I ducked again, and sure enough, he tried the same spinning kick he'd almost managed to bring Trebek down with. Advantage to me, I thought. That'll teach you to play tag with a hiver in a tunnel, and I began to draw my chainsword to finish this quickly. Consequently, I was completely unprepared for the low-level sweeping kick that followed, cracking into the back of my knee and pitching me to the floor. "You were almost right," he sneered. "I am in a world of hurt, but it's not mine, is it?" He kept trying to kick me while I was down, but the armour under my greatcoat protected me for the second time that day, and the impacts against my ribs were merely annoying rather than crippling. Then again, I suppose he might have done a better job if he'd concentrated on what he was doing instead of talking about it. I stayed silent, masking all but my general position in the darkness, and rolled aside, drawing the chainsword at last. "If you're going to fight, fight," I said, using the sound of my voice to draw him in and mask the whine of the blade as it powered up. "Don't make speeches." He must have thought he had me, because he charged in with a roar of triumph, striking down with the rifle butt at where he must have thought my head was. But I'd already moved by then, rolling aside and slashing at his legs with the weapon. I'd hoped to take the treacherous mongrel off at the knees, to be honest, but the keening of the blade must have warned him, and he turned aside at the last second. So all I got was a good cut across one of his calves. Emperor's guts! It must have done the job, though, because he was backing off, and the chamber was suddenly bright with half a dozen luminators bobbing in hands or utility tape to the barrels of hellguns. "Commissar!" Amberlee nodded to me, a casual greeting as though we'd just met in the street. "Inquisitor!" I rolled to my feet, advancing on Kelp, who limped backwards, his expression panicky. A trail of blood followed him. "Excuse me a moment. I'll be right with you as soon as I've finished this." "Stay back!" He raised the hellgun, aiming it at my chest. Incredibly, he still didn't seem to realize that I'd concealed armor there, or he'd have gone for a headshot, I'm sure. "One more step and I'll kill you!" I stopped, still a couple of meters too far to finish him off with the chainsword, and he smiled maliciously. "Or do you still think you can do something from there?" I shrugged. "Jürgen, kill him," I said. The expression on Kelp's face was almost comical for the half second or so that he still had one. Then he exploded into a small pile of gently steaming offal. I turned to my aide, who was lowering the melter, and nodded an acknowledgement.
Thank you, I added.
You're welcome, sir, he replied, as though he'd rendered me no greater service than pouring my tea, and I turned back to Amberley.
This is a pleasant surprise, I added, playing the unflappable hero for all it was worth. I didn't think I'd see you again until I got back to the barracks.
Neither did I, she admitted with a slight smile. But I picked up the carryaway from your combead, and we just headed in the direction the signal was strongest in.
I'm glad you did. I glanced across to where Trebek was scraping a gooey piece of kelp residue from her boot. Amberley's smile broadened.
You seem to have the situation well in hand, I shrugged.
I've faced worse odds.
No doubt, but he did you a favour in a way.
I must have looked puzzled at that point, because she explained as though pointing out something obvious.
He made you a lot easier to find. Once we got close enough, we just had to follow the noise.
Her words hit me like a bucket of ice water, or a Valhallan shower, which I don't recommend to the unwary, by the way. Form up, I said to the troopers. We're moving out.
Just a moment, sir.
Hollenby was rummaging in his medkit. I'd like to get you patched up first.
I swear that was the first time I realized I'd taken any damage from the scuffle, or possibly the firefight in the big chamber. My knuckles were smeared with blood. My first thought was that it served me right for punching a suit of carapace armor, but they hadn't been skinned all that badly, and the augmetic ones not at all. Most of it had come from the large graze on my forehead, which, now that I'd finally noticed it, had begun to sting abominably. I fended the young medic off as he sprayed it with something.
"We don't have time for that," I said. "If you heard something, you might not have been the only ones." That got them moving, let me tell you. The thought of facing another horde of hybrids and pure strains was enough to motivate anyone. We moved out in good order, though. I was pleased to note the surviving members of the team actually seemed to mesh together as soldiers should. Now kelp was gone, the friction which had marred the mission since it started had dissipated, seemingly along with his molecules. And Trebek took point without needing to be ordered to. If she kept this up, I found myself thinking, I might even consider letting her have her corporal's stripes back.
We were lucky back there,
I said, falling in beside Amberley again. She raised an eyebrow.
How so?
When they attacked before, most of them went for the tower rather than us.
And you found that curious?
I nodded. When I fought Steelers before on Kefia, they didn't prioritize, just went for the nearest targets.
Intriguing, she said.
Mind you, after that Promethean tank went up, they could only get to the Xenos anyway.
It was before then, I said, right at the start. They only seemed to come after us once we'd started to retreat.
And you say this isn't typical gene stealer behavior, she prompted.
Not in my experience, I confirmed.
I see.
Thank you, Commissar.
She looked thoughtful, and once again, her eyes were fixed on Jürgen. We pushed on quickly, following a run of piping which seemed to be tending upwards, but I couldn't shake the sense of unease that settled over me as we trotted through the dark. I'd suggested dousing the luminators again, but Amberley overruled me, insisting we make the best time we could, so I left my own off and hurried along at the rear of the group. That way I got the benefit of the others' lights without making myself quite so obvious a target. I didn't like it, though. My palms were tingling again, and my scalp crawled with the anticipation of a sudden shot from the shadows, or an eruption of pure strains from the darkness. One thing I'd learned from my previous encounters with the creatures, they were remarkably stealthy and preferred to strike from the shadows, as the Astartes I'd boarded the space hulk with had learned the hard way. The hybrids weren't so worrying, their human genes making them both more conspicuous and easier to kill, even if they were able to use ranged weapons against us.
So far, so good, Amberley muttered, which was tempting fate if ever I heard it. We'd been remarkably lucky so far, but I knew that couldn't be expected to last.
They won't be too far behind, I reminded her. In fact, given the speed at which they moved, I was vaguely surprised that they hadn't caught up with us yet. Sudden understanding hit me like a blow to the stomach. They didn't have to comb an entire labyrinth to try and find us. They had sentries posted on the main routes in and out. All they had to do was wait and reinforce their perimeter guards, and we'd walk right into them in our own good time.
Wait, I said.
We could be running into an ambush. I thought rapidly, calculating our most probable position and the distance we'd penetrated after finding the cavern full of the tower's victims. We were still comfortably short, but... The sudden detonation of a las bolt ahead, blowing shards of rockcrete from the wall beside Trebek, derailed my chain of thought at once. I'd missed a trick. They were combing the corridors from their outer perimeter, tightening the noose around us.
"Pull back! Consolidate!"
I yelled as Trebek crouched low to return the fire. Running figures could be seen beyond her, picked out by the beam of the luminator taped to the barrel of her gun, and she squeezed the trigger, felling a young man in the uniform of the PDF. For a moment I wondered if we'd made a horrible mistake, and were opening fire once more on our own allies. But some of the other figures beside him were unmistakably hybrids. One young woman, who might have been attractive if it wasn't for the third arm growing from her right shoulder blade, tipped with a gene-stealer's razor-sharp claws, flicked the tip of a Xenoist braid from her eyes with a monstrous appendage. A surprisingly delicate gesture, I remember thinking at the time, and levelled the heavy stubber cradled in her other two hands. Before I could cry a warning, Sorrel punched a hole through her head with his usual unerring accuracy. A second PDF trooper, his uniform embellished with a blue towel tied round his upper arm for some reason, cried out in anguish, dropping his las gun, and cradled the body.
"I don't think we can, Commissar."
Jürgen was his usual phlegmatic self, seemingly as unconcerned as if he was asking me to approve a routine piece of paperwork.
"They're behind us as well."
He was right, too. The sounds of scurrying feet echoing down the tunnel in the direction from which we'd come.
"We have to punch through," Amberley said decisively. Valade and Hollenby nodded grimly to one another and opened fire on the cultists in support of Trebek, hugging the walls to present the lowest target profile. "Better do it fast," I shouted. I'd shone my luminator back down the corridor, and my heart nearly stopped. Instead of more ragged cultists, the narrow passage was choked with pure strings, jaws gaping, their teeth dripping slobber, as they charged forward at what looked like the pace of a landspeeder. I drew my las pistol and fired a futile volley at them. The lead one fell, and was instantly trampled to goo by the weight of the others as they ran over it, the snapping of chitin and the squish of its bodily fluids turning my stomach. And you really don't want to know about the smell.
"We're running out of time!"
Jürgen sent a melter blast down the corridor, but it barely slowed them. For every one that fell, there seemed to be an army in reserve.
"We're doing our best!"
Trebek called, aiming and firing in one smooth motion. Every time she squeezed the trigger, another cultist died, and her torso armor was scored with las bolt impacts. Whatever crimes she'd committed aboard the Righteous Wrath, she'd more than atoned for, and the flush of satisfaction I felt at this vindication of my decision to prevent her execution almost managed to drive out the rising terror I felt at the onrushing tide of chitinous death, which by now was almost upon us. Abruptly, Trebek took a bolt to the chest, the explosive tip bursting through her ribcage, splattering the wall next to her with viscera. She just had enough time to look surprised before the light faded from her eyes.
"Bella!"
Hullenby lowered his hellgun and scrabbled for his medkit. I grabbed his shoulder.
"Keep firing!" I shouted. "She's beyond help!"
And so would we be in a few more seconds if we couldn't punch our way out of here. He nodded and brought the weapon back on aim, squeezing the trigger reflexively. Amberley's bolt pistol barked in my ear, and another former PDF trooper died as messily as Trebek had done.
"This could be it,"
I said, feeling the peculiar light-headed fatalism that often kicks in when death looks inevitable. The tight knot of fear dissolved, replaced by the calm certainty that nothing I did now would make any difference. But I was damn well taking as many of the bastards with me as I could. The Inquisitor turned to answer me, but before she could say anything, a las bolt burst against the side of her head.
"Amberley!"
I yelled. But to my astonishment, she was suddenly gone, vanishing without a trace, apart from the sudden thunderclap of displaced air rushing in to fill the sudden vacuum in the space which she'd occupied.
"What the hell?"
"Commissar." Her voice was suddenly in my combeat. "Tell Jürgen to shoot the wall about 3 meters back from his current position.
Hurry!"
Sudden hope flared, and I did as I was bid, though as you'll appreciate, I wasn't in any position to understand what had happened to her or why she would issue so strange an instruction. To his credit, Jürgen complied as quickly and efficiently as he obeyed any order, and to my astonishment, a large hole appeared instantly about a meter across. The wall there was barely the width of my forearm, and I dived through before the sides had even had a chance to cool.
"This way!"
I shouted. Velade and Hollenby started to fall back, while Sorrel took a final shot at the onrushing pure strains. Jürgen turned to do the same, unleashing another blast of ravening energy, and then the masonry over the gap started to crumble.
"Hurry!"
I yelled, but it was too late. With a grinding roar, the wall collapsed behind me, raising a cloud of choking dust and sealing my companions in with the creatures, which would surely kill them all. Now, under any normal circumstances, the idea that I was safely sealed away from a gene-stealer horde behind tons of fallen masonry would just leave me feeling intensely relieved. I can only assume I got hit on the head or something, because without a second's thought, I started scrabbling at the rubble, trying to clear the way back to the corridor, which by now would undoubtedly be decorated with the internal organs of the others. I only desisted when I felt a hand on my shoulder. "Leave it, Caiaphas." Amberlee shook her head regretfully. "They're past helping now." I stood, slowly brushing the dust from my clothes, and wondered how I was ever going to manage without Jürgen. 13 years was a long time to serve together after all, and I was going to miss him. "What happened?" I asked, blinking dust from my eyes. It felt as though my brain was full of it too. "Where did you go?" "Here, apparently." Amberlee looked around at the chamber we were in. It wasn't very prepossessing, but at least it was free of gene stealers. "The displacer field dumped me here when I got shot."
"The what?"
I shook my head dazedly. My hair was full of dust, too, and I couldn't find my cap. For some reason, that seemed very important, and I kept looking round for it, even though it was almost certainly buried under piles of debris.
A common symptom of shock. Hardly surprising, under the circumstances.
"Displacer field. If I take a strong enough hit, it teleports me out of the way." She shrugged. "Most of the time, anyway."
"A useful toy," I said.
"When it works."
She glanced round the chamber.
"Shall we go?"
"Go where?" I asked, still trying to take it all in.
"Away, fast." She swung her luminator beam over a darker shadow in the corner of the room.
"This looks like a way out."
I nodded.
"I can feel an air current."
"Good." She looked at me curiously, and I realized that she couldn't. "What is it they say? You can take the boy out of the hive."
"Let's go, then."
Well, I didn't have any better ideas, so I trailed along after her. Although if I'd known what we were heading into, I might just have decided to stay put after all.
Editorial note. Once again, I must apologize for this, but it really is the only eyewitness account I've been able to find. Actually, there are the official after-action reports, too, which might yield a more coherent picture if someone were to go through them and collate the various viewpoints of a dozen different officers, but to be honest, I haven't the time or the patience. Extracted from Like a Phoenix from the Flames, The Founding of the 597th, by General Jenid Sula, retired, 097.M42.
By the time we had reached the old quarter, we had almost grown used to the shadowy presence of the Tau, flitting about us like malign ghosts. And it is greatly to the credit of the troopers I was honored to serve with that not one of them gave way to the temptation to exact retribution for the destruction of the city, despite the presence of an obvious target on more than one occasion. However strong this urge might become, and strong it was, we remained mindful of the injunction placed upon us, and focused our minds on the delicate mission with which we had been entrusted. Truly, there can be no foe more despicable than an imperial servant who has betrayed the trust of the Emperor. And we were, if anything, even more eager to call the wretched governor to account for his perfidy than we were to wreak deserved vengeance on the alien interlopers whose presence he had tolerated for so long, with such dire consequences. We had anticipated little difficulty in achieving this end, for what forces could he possibly have had at his disposal to defy his divine majesty's most loyal servants? A handful of palace guards, if that, whose martial abilities had been found sorely wanting, when they were called upon to defend his residence from no more than a street-brawling mob. So it was with ever-rising confidence that we swept through the desolated streets, on our errand of vengeance, a confidence which was soon to seem gravely misplaced. My first warning that all was not well was the sound of an explosion as a crack missile detonated against the hull of one of the Chimeras ahead of us. From my position in the turret of my command vehicle, I could see the bright blossoming of the explosion, an unfolding red rose of destruction that scored the armor plating on one side. It evidently failed to penetrate, however, as the dauntless gunner swung the turret round, unleashing a hail of heavy bolts at the importunate enemy. My sense of satisfaction at seeing the building from which the attack came, scoured with the Emperor's retribution, was short-lived, however, as a number of other missiles followed it, hissing from positions concealed in the rubble around us. Inevitably some found their mark, penetrating armor and shattering tracks, bringing several of our Chimeras to a halt, and the chatter on the Vox channels told me that our company was not alone in being so treacherously defied. The other elements of our regiment, strung out along many of the adjacent roads in an effort to surround the palace, were under similar attack, and a glance at my tactical slate was enough to tell me that this was a well-planned operation, executed with a meticulous precision, greatly at odds with the bedraggled and dispirited force we had expected to meet. Without further thought, I dropped back inside the Chimera, where the specialized sensoria and Vox equipment would let me direct my subordinates to greater effect, and began to plan our response.
"Halt and dismount," I ordered,
realizing that our advance would be stalled indefinitely unless we closed with the enemy on foot, our lumbering vehicles being easy targets for the dug-in missile teams, and our drivers made haste to obey. It was then that I took to my feet myself, for the whole vehicle rang with a sudden impact, and we slowed to a halt, thick smoke billowing through the crew compartment. Swift inquiry made it obvious that our driver was dead, so I lost no time in forming up my command team and bailing out of our now crippled Chimera. A scene of sheer pandemonium met my appalled gaze as we pounded down the ramp. Two of the armored carriers were on fire, and a handful of others immobilized. The rest were maneuvering into what cover they could find. I followed suit smartly as a flurry of lasbolts erupted from the enemy positions, impacting around us as we took whatever shelter presented itself.
"Third platoon, report."
Major Brocklaw's voice was strong in my combead, his calm demeanor reassuring despite the confusion surrounding us. I responded as crisply as I could, as befitted a warrior of the Emperor.
"We're immobilized and taking fire," I reported. "The enemy seems well dug in."
"They were waiting for us," he said. That was my opinion, too. The positions they occupied had to have been prepared some time in advance. The implications of this were staggering. The governor had obviously realized the game was up, but where had he found the troops we were facing? I leveled my optical enhancers and inhaled sharply.
"The enemy are PDF elements," I reported.
A couple of the lurking figures still had blue rags tied around an arm, but the squad leader, confusingly, bore the makeshift insignia of the Imperial faction in the recent civil disturbances.
"Loyalist or Xenoist?"
Colonel Castine cut in. For a moment I was at a loss as to how to answer.
"Both," I said at last. "Both factions seem to be working together now. That doesn't make sense,"
Brocklaw said, an edge of frustration beginning to enter his voice. But Castine remained unruffled, fine commander that she was.
"Nothing about this Emperor-forsaken rat-hole makes any sense,"
she pointed out reasonably. But the Major was right about one thing.
"There are no loyalists any more," he said. "Take them all." That was an order we could obey with enthusiasm, and we went to it with a will, of that you may be sure. All of the frustration we had endured since our arrival on Gravelax came boiling to the surface, transmuted into true martial zeal, and I vowed that the blood of the traitor would surely be shed this day. As I urged my troopers forward,
and watched the sentinels move up to suppress the first line of resistance. A flash of motion in the corner of my eye drew my attention skyward. Sure enough, it was one of the Tau's aerial picked casters, and a momentary shiver of apprehension passed through me as my mind became crowded with questions. What were the enigmatic aliens making of all this? And more to the point, what, if anything, were they intending to do about it?
Chapter 15. It's never too late to panic. Popular Valhallan folk saying. I don't mind admitting that the aftermath of the fight in the corridor had left me completely drained, both mentally and physically. I washed the worst of the dust from my throat with a couple of swallows from my canteen, but I couldn't shake the gritty feel of it from my skin, or my hair, or the inside of my clothes, and I wouldn't be able to either until about the third shower. As it turned out, by the time I got the opportunity for that, the dust would be the least of my worries. And Jürgen was dead. I still couldn't quite believe it. After so many years and so many dangers faced and bested together, the sense of loss was numbing and quite unexpected. Somehow I'd always assumed we'd meet our ends together, when fate finally pitched me into something my luck and finely honed survival instinct couldn't get me out of. So, for an indeterminate time, I said nothing, and trailed after Amberley, who at least seemed to have some kind of a plan. All this time, I remember, I kept my pistol in my hand. A curious thing to do, as we were in no apparent danger, but I'd somehow kept hold of it when the wall collapsed and felt strangely reluctant to return it to its holster. Later, I found bruising on my palm where I'd been grasping it, so tight was my grip.
As I said before, he seemed to be suffering from shock for some time after we lost our companions. He was, however, remarkably robust, and recovered far more quickly than I would have believed possible. No doubt the many perils he'd faced and escaped before had inured him to some extent to psychological traumas most men would have found incapacitating.
We'd gone some distance in silence before Amberley spoke again, the pressure in my ears telling me that the tunnel we were in had begun to descend gradually, but there didn't seem to be any obvious route back to the surface, so I guessed this was as good a direction as any. I suppose I should have mentioned it, but it never occurred to me that she wouldn't have noticed. If I'd realized that she hadn't, and thought we were still moving on the level, I certainly would have mentioned it, believe me, especially if I'd known what was waiting down there on the lowest tier. "Well, I guess that answers the main question anyway," she said. "Which question?" I asked. By now the whole situation had become so bizarre that none of it seemed to make any sense. I was beginning to feel that the only thing I could truly rely on was the prospect of more treachery and confusion to come, and in that I was far from disappointed. Amberley looked momentarily surprised, and then pleased that I'd responded. "The main one," she repeated. "Who would have something to gain by provoking a war with a Tau?" "The High Fleet," I said, and shuddered despite the clammy warmth of the tunnel. If the Steelers were indeed the harbingers of a fresh Tyranid onslaught, then they were working to a more grandiose strategy than any I'd heard of before, and the implications of that were far from comforting. She nodded, clearly pleased with my response, and intent on prolonging the conversation. I assume she was trying to keep me centered on the mission, and prevent me from dwelling too much on what had happened to our companions.
He assumes correctly. Right then, I needed a warrior with me, not a basket case.
The Steeler cult has obviously been active here for several generations already. Lucky it's such a backwater, or the contagion might have spread halfway across the sector by now.
Well, that's something, I agreed.
I know from my subsequent contacts with her that she followed up the possibility anyway, and managed to eradicate a couple of small sub-cults which had made the hop to neighbouring systems before they got properly established. But the danger did indeed seem to have been contained, at least until the High Fleet showed up in person, and we realised we were facing a war on two fronts. I thought for a moment, then added, "They've obviously been here long enough to infiltrate the PDF pretty thoroughly." "Among other things," the Inquisitor agreed. I nodded too, beginning to be drawn into the conversation in spite of myself. "It looks like they managed to get involved in the local political groups too, the Xenoist faction."
"And the Loyalist,"
she smiled grimly.
raising the tension between the two, splitting the PDF. Its currency to cabbages, it was cultists in both factions who started them shooting at each other and got the loyalists to attack the Tau. Hoping to draw us into a war so we'd chew each other to pieces and let the High Fleet walk into the sector practically unopposed, I shuddered again.